Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Well, unfortunately, this year at least, there won't be any crowds at baseball games across the country. That's if there's even a season at all. Last week, Major League Baseball presented its plan to the Players Union, proposing an abbreviated 82-game season starting in early July. But there's still a steep hill to climb, with negotiations focused on player safety and, yes, of course, the most contentious of all, money. This hour on Point, baseball's effort to come back during the pandemic. With me first from Kansas City, Jeff Passan. He is ESPN's senior MLB insider. Jeff, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So where do we stand right now with negotiations for the 2020 Major League Baseball season?
They're in a really tenuous spot and a really important spot, because we kind of understood the path these were going to take. It was going to be like every other negotiation between Major League Baseball and Players Association. They were going to be posturing at first, taking really extreme positions on what they want and how they were going to get it. But there is a ticking clock right now. And the issue, Jane, has not so much been the extremity of their positions, but what the positions actually are fighting about. And it's money. And it is not going over particularly well right now in the public, when in the midst of a pandemic, when tens of millions of people are unemployed, you've got billionaires and millionaires fighting over how to split up billions of dollars.
Yeah,
I think they recognize how that is absolutely a no-win situation for anybody involved.
So it is a fight. Tell us about this proposal, this 50-50 revenue split proposal. It's a non-starter for the players, at least, right?
Yeah, it has. It's funny. It hasn't even officially been proposed yet. Part of the issue that both sides have is the amount of information that is somehow seeping its way out into the media. And, you know, a day before a proposal is supposed to happen, the information will find its way out there. And the reaction to this revenue split, 50-50 between the players and the owners, was so overwhelmingly negatively received that Major League Baseball didn't even end up proposing it. The reason it was received so poorly by the players is because, unlike the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL, Major League Baseball does not have a salary cap. Now, when you have a salary cap sport, a revenue split makes sense. It's the easiest way to divide things because you have levels that you can actually reach, and you say, well, if this is how much money is being made in the industry, we know that we can fairly split this up. In baseball, it's a much more free market. It's a free market onto which players have held for generations now. And so even though this was not theoretically a salary cap, it felt like one to the players, and it's why it has been so summarily rejected out of hand.
Here's Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred describing the financial repercussions for team owners. Without a season in 2020, he appeared on CNN last week.
We're a big business, but we're a seasonal business. And unfortunately, this crisis began at kind of the low point for us in terms of revenue. We hadn't quite started our season yet. And if we don't play a season, the losses for the owners could approach $4 billion.
Okay, $4 billion, that's a big loss. What are the recommendations? What do the players want? What do the owners want? Where do we stand?
Well, all of this, Jane, goes back to a March agreement. At the end of March, right around when opening day was supposed to be, the players and the league came to an agreement on what a potential season might look like, the framework of it. And if there is no season, the players get a grand sum from the league of $170 million of the expected, during a regular season, $4.2 to $4.4 billion in salary to split up amongst themselves. Also in that agreement was a clause talking about payment if there is a season. And it says pretty plainly that if there is a season, players are going to get a pro rata share of their salaries dependent on the number of games played. So if you play 81 out of the regular 162 games, you get half of your expected salary. The issue is that there's also a clause in the contract talking about what happens in the case of there being games played in front of no fans. And that's where we are right now. In Major League Baseball's plan going forward, they want to play in home cities only without fans in the stands until it is safe. And MLB looks back at that agreement and says, hold on a second. Us paying you that pro rata share is conditional on us having a conversation about the economic feasibility of no fans in the stands. And owners across baseball right now, Jane, are saying it is economically unfeasible for us to stay solvent if we play games with no fans in stands. Now, again, this gets back to what we were talking about earlier. They're taking extreme positions. They're posturing. Is Major League Baseball really going to lose $4 billion as an industry this year? I don't know that, but the union is very skeptical of that number. And they're trying to weigh the difficulty of being a good partner with this organization that you have to be at least decent terms with if you're going to have games, and standing up for their constituency.
So there are the economics of this, and then there are the health protocols here, which Major League Baseball has put forward. They released this 67-page health and safety protocol for the 2020 season, if it is to be played. Very detailed rules, very interesting, Jeff, right down to the color-coded seating charts in the dugout. And a lot of people are raising their eyebrows about this, but tell us what a day in the life of a Major League player would look like if this 2020 season happens according to these guidelines.
Yeah, remember, Jane, the seating charts are not just in the dugout. Under this proposal, players and some coaches would be sitting in the empty stands and practicing good social distancing there. I mean, you ask health experts about this 67-page memo, and they almost uniformly agree that it is incredibly thorough and that Major League Baseball actually did a pretty good job coming up with some of these to the point where some of them may be a little excessive.
I got a list here. I got to get these in. Players must wash or sanitize their hands every half inning. If a baseball is touched by multiple players, it's out. Get rid of it. No spitting. No high fives. No sunflower seeds. Players cannot stand shoulder to shoulder for the national anthem. No post-game showers, Jeff. No post-game showers. What else here?
Suggested, Jane, that you may consider not taking a post-game shower. That one's not going to stick. And you know, the sunflower seeds might not stick. And there, another big one with the players, hydrotherapy. Hot tubs and cold tubs are very important to players these days, and they want to be able to use them. And these are the types of things that when the union got back to Major League Baseball yesterday, actually, about this protocol, there were a lot of questions, and they said, we need to have discussions about this. But ultimately, I don't think that health and safety are going to be the biggest issues here.
Still the money.
It's just that when it's all said and done, everybody's on the same page with health and safety. Nobody wants a baseball player to contract coronavirus. Nobody wants a coach or a staff member or any of the people who are going to be inside. It's not quite an impermeable bubble that baseball is going to be creating around its players and the various staff members, but it's pretty close. Nobody wants that. The problem is the financial issues, they are, while not entirely divergent, quite different in their motivations. Mm-hmm.
And so if we're going to start baseball in early July, what's the deadline for all this, Jeff? Theoretically, there needs to be some sort of spring training, I would think, you know, clock's ticking.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I have a column going up on ESPN.com about this very subject. Somebody this week, a high-ranking official, said to me, the calendar isn't our friend. And that essentially means you better get a deal done sooner than later. Because if you're really intent on starting spring training 2.0 in the middle of June, if you're really intent on having a big American celebration on the 4th of July, when baseball is actually back and you have a full slate of games across the country, you need a deal in place by the end of May. And there is a lot, Jane, to get done between now and then.
I guess so. And the big question that looms is either side, the players or the owners, are they willing to risk the health of baseball? And really, a lot of public goodwill in the middle of a pandemic by not signing a deal, by not moving forward. I've got about 30 seconds here, Jeff.
Well, Jane, they were willing to risk the health of baseball and really the long-term vagaries that came with it back in 1994 when they canceled the season and didn't have a World Series. I would like to believe that Major League Baseball and the players have learned from the strike back in 94 that that is not something that you do in normal times, let alone right now.
Jeff Passan, ESPN senior MLB insider. Last quick question. If you were a betting man, would you say we're going to have a 2020 season, Jeff?
Jane, as you know, there's no betting allowed in baseball.
That was too easy. I set you up for that one. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Have a good one. Take care.
Listeners, are you excited about baseball's possible comeback this summer? Should players and owners put aside their differences to bring America's pastime back? We're discussing the prospects. Much more after the break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing the proposed plan for Major League Baseball to return to action in July if the players and owners can come to an agreement. Let me bring in now from Hartford, Doug Glanville. He's a former Major League Baseball player. During his playing season, he served as a representative for the Players Association. He currently co-hosts the baseball-centric podcast Starkville. Doug Glanville, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And with us from New York City, Jason Gay. He's a longtime award-winning sports columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Jason Gay, welcome back to you.
Thank you, Jane.
So, Doug Glanville, I'll start with you as a former player, as a team representative. How do you see this moment? What is at stake for baseball right now?
Everything's at stake. And, you know, combining the necessity of figuring out what system by which they can play, it's the question marks around the certainty of whether they can play at all. And, you know, when you look at the example and the opportunity that it could set with the fact that all eyes are on Major League Baseball almost looking at it as a lens to, can we get back to some semblance of normal, or can we actually move forward with certain traditions? Baseball is at the heart of this, and the way they handle it and the way they resolve the differences to make this possible is absolutely critical to how anything can move forward.
Everything's on the line, Doug Glanville says. Jason Gay, how do you see it? Jumpstarting the 2020 MLB season was always a tricky proposition in this moment. Is it possible? How do you see this moment, Jason?
Well, it's fascinating to listen to Jeff, who's, you know, very plugged into the situation, talk about the particulars of it and say that they have to have something, an agreement in place by the end of May. Does it sound anywhere close to an agreement right now when you consider all the variables that are out there? And they still haven't sort of processed some of the technical elements of it. I know they've sort of regionalized the leagues and trying to limit travel and so on, but they haven't even specified how these players are going to travel around. So there are very particular things like spitting and sunflowers and handshakes and all that kind of stuff. But on top of it are these rather large, significant issues, which, you know, is going to require a lot of people on a very intense Zoom call to try to figure out by the end of the month.
Doug Glanville, we heard Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred describing the financial repercussions for team owners. You're really familiar with the dynamic between owners and players. How are players playing their hand right now? How do you see it?
Well, there's an element of skepticism when you talk about the numbers, and that's always been part of the history of the questions around trust between the owners and the Players Association. And so with that skepticism, all these systems have come to play in the economics since the dawn of the game, and especially once the union was strengthened and formed with Marvin Miller and so on. But the challenge that they have is, you know, trusting that space in between that you have to rely on. And the circumstances are so challenging because of all the question marks around the science and the health questions, let alone the economics. And at the heart of it, as you know, all the years I worked with the executive subcommittee and the Players Association, the economic system certainly was a key point. And when you don't have an agreement around, as you mentioned, the $4 billion loss and the questions around, okay, do we audit for those numbers, all these questions that arise, then you don't exactly have a common starting point. And that's a huge challenge. And regardless of the circumstances, they're going to have to resolve the numbers games, and they certainly have to agree upon those numbers from start.
Here is Tampa Bay Rays pitcher Blake Snell saying that he will not be on the field this season with a reduced salary. He cited the risk of contracting the coronavirus and his opposition to the MLB's proposal of a 50-50 revenue split. He posted a video, here's part of it, on social media last week.
I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine, okay? And that's just the way it is for me. Like, I'm sorry if you guys think differently, but the risk is way the hell higher and the amount of money I'm making is way lower. Why would I think about doing that?
Doug Glanville, you're a former player. You know, in this moment when people are struggling to put food on the table, you know, millions and millions out of work. And, you know, I understand the perspective, but, you know, when you make $50 million a year, maybe you can take a little bit of a hit and get on the field.
Right. And when I heard that, I, you know, reacted strongly also in the tone deaf components to it that have on the social elements. No question about it. I mean, you have essential workers, people risking their lives don't have the opportunity nor the choice to say, I'm just electing not to play. Now there is, but then the bifurcation for me has this non-essential component to it. And the economics and legal discussion is worth having. I wouldn't say on a public domain, in the public domain, but certainly it's a discussion point amongst players and owners. Wait a minute, why am I taking this huge pay cut and increasing this risk? That's a fair question to ask. I think how he framed it and, you know, left out all the people that actually make a game possible that are facing the same stresses and don't have the financial flexibility to say, I'm not going to play. Certainly Blake Snell has that right and can choose that. There's no question that what is different to me today is when you look at the sign-stealing scandal with the Astros, that opened the door for players to publicly go directly to talk about sort of whether it's union issues or other players. And when you come up into the game, certainly in my era in the 90s and 2000s, you're indoctrinated into this mindset that you have to preserve the past and protect the future. And there's a certain selflessness has to come through to be truly unified as a players association. And the challenge today is that every player is facing a certain existential or survival related component like nothing else we've ever seen, whether you're living with grandparents or whether you have a newborn, or and those personal choices are hard to aggregate or consolidate around this sort of union mission, which has been longstanding the strength of the Players Association. And that's the big issue on what the players are facing, because it's one thing to be battling individually like Blake Snell with ownership or positions. It's another thing to unify that message and actually come away with a solution in a front that will go up against player the league and therefore say, here's where we stand. That's the huge challenge.
So, Jason Gay, if this season blows up over money, you know, I'm envisioning that the 1994 players' strike, Jeff Passan made mention of it, it's not pretty. And especially now in the midst of a pandemic, when so many people are looking for something like baseball, America's pastime to bring people together or to just do something, right? How do you see this moment? And what's your reaction to Blake Snell's to his comments?
Well, I think if you read around the league, a number of players felt that he was giving a voice, a feeling that may be terribly unpopular in the public domain, but might actually be shared by a fair amount of his fellow players. There's a parallel track we haven't discussed here, which is the politics of it. And the White House has made abundantly clear that they see sports, and in particular the sport of baseball, being symbolic of America's return to some degree of normalcy. They have been very public about this fact. The idea of baseball returning over 4th of July weekend, there's intense symbolism in that alone. And so I think there is, you know, in addition to all this, you know, stuff that's happening behind the scenes between the players union and the league to try to make this work, there's also an enormous amount of political pressure and public pressure to try to reach some sort of resolution as well, which is the kind of thing that makes you think that maybe this might in fact happen, because all the forces that need to collide seem to be colliding here. You may have seen earlier this week, Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, came out and said that he will do everything within his power in New York to try to make games with no fans happen in the state of New York. The state of New York is very trepidatiously coming back from this. So the fact that they were out in front of this, and numerous other states have come out in front of this, there's a whole other amount of exuberance about trying to make this work.
You think back, Doug Glanville, to some of America's darkest moments when America has turned to baseball. After the attack on Pearl Harbor, FDR's green light letter, where he suggested that night games would be a great source of relaxation and escape for workers that were coming home from late night shifts. I mean, Jason Gay brings up a really important point, the politics of this and the symbolism to some degree of America returning to normal. How do you see that side of this argument, that perspective, Doug?
Well, I see it as a great opportunity for Major League Baseball to set that tone. We always have had, especially in recent times, this debate about sticking to sports and sports relevance to society. This is an opportunity for baseball to set a certain tone, not only educating us and giving us opportunities to sift through the science and safety and the protocols and test things, but also the opportunity to bring back the spirit and some of the heart of what we care about. What makes sports sort of the fabric of our country and the world in some respects. So, which is why strategically, I think they should figure out a way to deal, like a Blake Snell commentary, to elaborate, to get deeper into that and actually have a robust discussion around it, recognizing the uncertainty that's at play.
Let me get a caller in here. Mary Frances is in Peaks Island, Maine. Hi, Mary Frances. Welcome to On Point.
How are you doing today? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say that I, like so many other people, am missing baseball. I've been a baseball fan since I was a little girl. My father took me to see the Mets and taught me how to keep score. And I've been a lifelong fan. And I've segued from being a Mets fan into being a Red Sox fan, and I've had some great experiences being a Red Sox fan.
So you think baseball should be back this summer, Mary Frances? You think we'll get there?
You know, I would love it, but I'm on the fence because I think, just like everybody else, these players are at risk, and they're going to be in close quarters, and then they're going home to their families, and I just don't know. I would love to see it, but I don't think it's fair to expect anybody to take a risk for somebody else's pleasure.
Mary Frances, thank you so much. Does she have a point, Jason Gay? Playing this game, playing baseball, puts some risk. There is inherent risk in playing with all the people that are associated with making this happen. You know, the small army of people to feed and house and transport these players from city to city. What do you say, Jason?
Sure. I mean, absolutely. There's risk to this, and there's risk to anybody returning to a workplace now. You know, there's obviously different grades of it. And when we talk about the disputes with the union and so on, this is why unions exist, is, you know, to balance issues of worker safety. That's why they were created in the first place. And I know that we're into the money part of this too, but safety has to be a critical component of this too. And just to go to something she said at the top, I think for a great many people, you know, I'm a little bit skeptical when, you know, governments get say, let's get the games going because it's important for America. I don't dispute that, you know, people would like to see baseball back. What I think about baseball is also, it's kind of has this atmospheric quality. It's unlike any other sport in the respect that it's kind of like a soundtrack to the season. All of us are familiar with the sort of ambient noise of a baseball game on radio in the background and what that means to people. And I think to have that kind of soundtrack return, you know, I don't want to say it's an inspirational thing, but I think it would make people feel there was at least some semblance of normalcy in what is clearly not a very normal time.
Doug Glanville, how would playing the game of baseball be different with all these different structures and physical distancing rules that the MLB has put forward? You know, wash your hands every half inning kind of stuff. How does that impact player camaraderie, the backslapping, the clubhouse culture, the game itself?
Well, for starters, I don't even know how they'll be able to keep this consistent through so many different people that are going to be involved to forget to not spit and all these. That is highly challenging because you're talking about retraining all these, you know, habits, really. I mean, I eat bags of sunflower seeds during a game, and it's almost a reflex to do it. So I'm not sure how they can be able to do it and not be in the public eye, like, oh, see that guy sneezed or this person spit out sunflowers.
Right. And how do you enforce it? You know, how do you enforce it? If a player fist bumps a teammate, will he be fined? You know,
I mean, right. I mean, there's going to be an element of not being able to follow this. And what that means and how they respond to it is another thing, but there is no way you're going to get all these players to be able to pull that off. And like, look, I always look at this issue through my career. It's one thing when I was a rookie coming up, or I just got traded in 97 to the Phillies and I was just starting. I was single. I lived by myself in a house. I didn't have kids. So it's different, the risk or my mentality and perception about what this means. Now, forward to the end of my career, where my father was gravely ill and we were visiting in a hospital, or later after I, you know, retired and I was married and now I have four kids. That's a whole different equation. So that individual concern around it and trying to, as you mentioned, meet these protocols is going to be completely divergent and different amongst players. So to tie that together in a locker room culture is going to be extremely difficult.
So I'm going to talk about baseball without the fans in the stands. And to that point, I want to bring Jim in here, a caller from Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Has anyone thought about a lottery system which would allow some fans into the ballparks and still maintain social distancing and bring some money into the system? Although, if I was a betting man, I would say there's no way MLB is going to happen this year. Thanks.
Hey, Jim, thank you. Jason Gay, what do you think? Some sort of lottery system?
Listen, I'm open for any kind of invention here, and I think leagues need to be creative. I've suggested one super fan from each ball club in any, you know, capacity, you know, just the person in face paint and glitter and the whole thing, and have them on separate sides of the stadium.
The stadium
elaborately.
To himself,
sort of the Bob Uecker for each club. You know, listen, I think what we're describing here is nowhere near the genuine article. This is not going to be a complete substitute for any kind of sports experience. Hopefully it will be good enough. I think that unquestionably watching some of the leagues that have started to come back without fans, we're seeing baseball played in Asia, we're seeing ultimate fighting, cage fighting happening in the United States, we're seeing soccer played in Germany. It's weird. It's weird. Mm-hmm. It is weird to not have the dynamic of roaring fans and just that whole atmosphere of it. I think that for many people, sports is a television endeavor for sure. But I think we're underestimating what fans deliver to the actual viewing experience. Even if you're sitting home alone on the couch, I think that the thing that gets projected through that screen from the energy of the crowd, and Doug can speak to this certainly, the way that players respond to the crowd have to perform under that, those are huge dynamics. And I think it is going to be very quirky to watch games play without fans. So it makes absolute sense from a medical standpoint, but it will be a strange experience.
So Doug Glanville, quickly before the break here, one play-by-play announcer said his network is thinking about pumping crowd noise into this, maybe even virtual fans, you know, drawing them on the screen. So what does the game lose without crowds in the stands, without that energy? You're a former player.
You lose the soul. You lose a lot of soul of the game. I mean, and it's not just because of the 50,000 in one place. It's also the personal engagement. I think of so many moments in my life and my career where fans literally changed the trajectory of my career. A moment they said something to me, a letter they wrote, an engagement on the field. That is a huge loss and can't be replaced. So it won't be the same. You just hope, as Jason mentioned, it would be enough.
Doug Glanville, Jason Gay, stick with me. We're discussing the possible return of Major League Baseball this summer and the hurdles that remain during this pandemic. After the break, legendary broadcaster Bob Costas will be with us. That's coming up. I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. We'll be right back.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing America's longtime love affair with professional baseball and whether the games will go on in 2020. In 1989, iconic baseball film Field of Dreams continues to resonate with audiences after more than three decades. Here's the memorable scene with the character played by James Earl Jones urging the down-on-his-luck Iowa farmer played by Kevin Costner to have faith in turning his cornfield into a baseball diamond.
This field... This game is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
With us this hour, former Major League Baseball player Doug Glanville and Wall Street Journal sports columnist Jason Gay. With me now, Bob Costas. He's 28-time Emmy Award-winning broadcaster. He's been named National Sportscaster of the Year a record eight times. He currently serves as host and announcer for the MLB Network. Bob Costas, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane.
So you've loved this game since childhood. You gave the eulogy for Mickey Mantle back in 95. What's going on in your heart right now, a baseball season on a razor's edge during a pandemic, Bob?
Well, I think the only sensible way to regard it is, sure, we'd like to have baseball back. This is baseball season. It isn't just the games. It's part of the rhythm of the spring and a summer and into the early fall. But we shouldn't resume in haste. Major League Baseball put out a 67-page document last week that is impressive in its thoroughness and meticulousness and the care they took to anticipate almost every eventuality if they're able to come back and play. But the mere fact that that lengthy document with so many particulars governing behavior and protocols and everything else, that that's necessary to even consider coming back, tells you how daunting a task it will be and how many pitfalls there will be if they're able to start in July to get from point A to point Z, to get from July through a half schedule, roughly 82 games, and into a November World Series that might be played at a neutral site somewhere, a warm weather site, dome stadium, whatever it might be. Their intentions are good, and I think they've brought the best expertise to bear, but it's a tightrope walk.
So, you know, we talk about the health protocols in the 67-page document, but really, it sounds like the 2020 season is coming down to money here, and I wonder what your thoughts are about that. You know, this is the worst time for many people to be thinking about, a player who makes $50 million a year, I've lost my job, I can't put food on the table. Given these circumstances, you know, should that conversation even be happening, Bob Costas?
Well, it should be happening as far from the scrutiny of the public as possible. But maybe that's not possible in these days. What happened when they had to suspend the season during spring training was that the owners made a lump sum payment of $170 million to the Players Association to be dispersed among their membership as they saw fit. Then they reached an agreement that when we're able to come back, players will receive prorated salaries. You play half a season, you get half of what your season contract would call for. The Players Association is saying that's the deal. The owners are saying, well, we could not possibly have anticipated playing without fans. Overall, 40% of baseball's revenues, apart from television and other marketing and whatnot, 40% comes from game day receipts, the tickets, the parking, the concessions, et cetera. With some teams, it's higher than that. With some teams, it's around 50%. So they're saying, look, we're already going to take a hit. We're already going to lose a whole lot of money. Share some of the burden with us. We'll split the revenues 50-50. Regardless of the merits of the player's position from a labor negotiation standpoint, to the public, that puts the players in a bad light if they don't say, sure, we'll go for that. So we'll see what happens.
So I know you remember 1994 well, the player's strike that torpedoed the season, the World Series, left a bad taste for many years. What would be the impact, Bob Costas, of the damage to the game itself if they cannot work something out, if this 2020 season is canceled?
If the reason it's canceled is a labor dispute, a money dispute, that's a horrible public relations hit for baseball and for the players as a group. If the reason they either can't resume or they have to suspend again is because out of honest concern for health and safety, then I think that's okay. Everyone would understand that. But if it's a money dispute, then you're right back where they were during the 70s and 80s and especially 94, 95, when they lost the World Series at the back end of the 94 season and the beginning of the 95 season. As kind of a touchstone here, they had a labor negotiation in early 2002. It was just after 9/11. And many players said to their leadership, which could be very doctrinaire, very capable but very doctrinaire, hey, wait a minute. We don't want to dig our heels in now and fight over every last penny. That's a terrible, not only from a public relations standpoint, it doesn't really reflect where we're coming from. We're Americans, too. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be in that position. And they were able to reach a settlement without a work stoppage, which would have been another disaster.
You've recently said, Bob Costas, that this would be a good time to experiment with some new rules in the game, if indeed this season goes forward. You know, we're talking about some of these gimmicks like virtual fans and piping in applause. What are you talking about with some new rules of the game here?
Well, even before the COVID-19 pandemic, there had been discussions about a variety of tweaks to the game. For example, having electronic balls and strikes, take the plate umpire out of that. They thought about putting a runner on second base at the start of each extra inning in order to conclude the game more quickly. I think that's insane, but if they're going to experiment, now's the time to experiment. They've talked about a new postseason format, expanding the playoff field and having a different way of conducting the postseason. Some of those ideas are good, some of them not so good, but now's the time to look at those things. Now's the time to figure out whether you want to put in a pitch clock with nobody on base because pace of game is a question. So short of running the bases clockwise, I think that fans would understand in these unique circumstances, if they're going to play without fans, if they're going to play a World Series possibly at a neutral site, you might as well try everything within reason now and see if any of it has merit for when things return to normal.
You're still calling games, Bob. You did 20 games last year for the MLB Network. What would change for you as a broadcaster? What would be different in the broadcast booth, especially without fans out there?
Well, I'm waiting to find out. It's possible that we would do games. Certainly local broadcasters will do games from empty stadiums in their broadcast booth. It's also possible that games could be called from a studio off a monitor. That's been discussed as well. Neither of those circumstances is ideal, but we just have to roll with the punches. Any broadcaster can tell you that the crowd, not just when the crowd reacts, not just when something big happens and there's wild cheering, for example, in baseball, the murmur of the crowd, that kind of low hum,
yes,
that's part of the broadcast. And almost unconsciously, because we've done it for so long, you're hearing it through your headset. It affects how much you think you should speak. Hmm. The little spaces where you wouldn't ordinarily speak are filled with crowd sound. When they're not, 4 or 5 seconds can seem like an eternity. Hmm. We'll all have to adjust to it.
So what do you think? Yes or no? Thumbs up, thumbs down? What's your gut, Bob Costas?
I think they start, Jane. I think they start in July. I have my fingers crossed that with this tightrope walk that they can make it from one side to the other.
Bob Costas, host and announcer for the MLB Network. Great to have you on the program today, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Be well.
Thank you. Doug Glanville, Jason Gay, jump back in here. Really interesting, I thought, the experimenting with new rules. What do you think about that, Doug? Electronic balls and strikes and such as a player? What do you think?
No, I agree with Bob that this is an opportunity to try different things. And once again, when it involves collectively bargained issues, it's going to be negotiated. But when you talk about seven-inning games or double headers or all kinds of, you know, whether it's a designated hitter for the National League and the American League, it should all be on the table because they're not only an opportunity to innovate and to try things that could stand to go forward, it's also an opportunity to recapture some of the elements of the past that you feel has been lost through whether the analytics revolution or other. So I see it as a really good chance right now to experiment in ways that could reshape the game and the direction it's going.
Let me get a call in here from Boston. Adam is on the line. Hi, Adam. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm wondering, particularly with Doug, because he's a former player, if baseball is self-aware enough to kind of recognize what this moment in time could mean if they were to come back, given how hungry people are for sports right now. And I'm a huge baseball fan and have been so for over 30 years. But, you know, it seems like common sense that the viewership and popularity, particularly among younger generation, has slipped over the last few years. And this just seems like, given if it's, you know, we have to make sure it's safe, but if it is safe, it seems like a wonderful opportunity for baseball to connect with younger viewers in a way that they haven't been able to over the last few years.
And revitalize itself. Adam, thank you so much for the call. Doug, he asked about you specifically. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And, you know, the recognition is important. You know, you go back in time, 94-95 strike. That is really the last time there's been labor stop. That is unprecedented. There's been peace. Now, yes, saber rattling, yes, but there's been peace. They've worked everything out for a period that never existed since the dawn of the game. So there's a lot of precedent to work with that. And recognizing, as he mentioned, the chance to set that tone and to move forward in a constructive way. As Bob Costas referenced, the concern is how it would be framed, right? If it doesn't work out, will it become this economic? And I think the reason why the Players Association historically has not tried to negotiate that much in the press is because you can't win that battle. As you mentioned, it would be framed as a billionaire versus millionaire dispute. And that would be, it would be an oversimplification, but it would also be devastating. So I have to get it done. And in line with that question, because there is a larger opportunity here. Mm.
Jason Gay, what about that? What about the trickle-down effect of all this? MLB is forcing through a very unpopular plan to shutter 42 minor league teams.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking all the way down to these little league kids, little league sports. What's the impact of this to the pipeline?
Well, that's a really important question. And that's something that gets lost a little bit when we have, you know,
lots of focus on the millionaires arguing with the billionaires. Right. There are a great many people whose lives are tangentially or directly impacted by the lack of major professional sports in this country. People who have everyday lives in, you know, stadium work and food, in, you know, selling souvenirs, all that kind of stuff. There's just an enormous economy that's built around games, and not just at the high level. As you mentioned, minor league baseball has been, you know, a significant part of the American experience as well. And I do think that sometimes we're sort of overly focused on the professional aspects of it, because I know as a parent, I'm very eager for Little League to get back too. That would be a tremendous thing. Yeah. If, in fact, baseball could be that kind of catalyst to bring back youth sports and show a pathway to doing it safely, I think there's enormous benefit there as well, because I know there are a great many young boys and girls out there who are eager to get back on the baseball diamond or a sporting field of any kind. And if professional sports can serve somehow to get that going, I think that would be enormously beneficial.
Jason, you've said in the last little while, don't overlook the role gambling plays in speeding up the timetable for sports to return amidst COVID. How so?
Well, I think if you're a professional gambler or somebody who sees themselves as a master of this stuff, you're probably a little bored of betting on German soccer and baseball and faraway countries. I think that they're eager to get their edge back, right? I think that there is, you know, obviously a huge financial investment in all of the professional leagues now in partnering with betting books around the world. You have, of course, you know, many, many millions that are bet every single day legally and, you know, candidly, still not legally in some states. And I think that that is part of the what we're talking about right here at the top, which is that fundamentally what's driving this, what's bringing people to the table here and what's creating the momentum for this to happen in July is money. And it's right. Money in all elements.
And so back to that, we loop around where we started. Doug Glanville, the impact, the damage to the game itself, if this comes down to money and if both sides can't work something out and the 2020 season is canceled, negotiations are ongoing. You tweeted a quote that framed the challenge here. You said, change happens at the speed of trust. And that's really important in this moment as we're coming down to the wire as to whether we're going to get a season this year of baseball.
Well, it does. And you think about what happened when the National Basketball Association, the NBA, once they set that tone aggressively to say, okay, this is serious, we have to stop, there was a ripple effect. There was a certain acceptance. Well, Major League Baseball has that great responsibility also, because once they say it's time to play, you mentioned Little Leagues, there'll be a lot of suits that are going to follow and say, okay, yeah, now we can do this. And so therefore the responsibility is inordinate because they want to do it right. And economics can't be the sticking point. It's a reality. I think it's much more about the structure of the economics and all these things when you talk about the nuance. But when you're faced with unemployment and the world collapsing in that regard, you recognize that people are suffering, and baseball can set the tone in a way that can be responsible. And that's the way they need to do it.
And Jason Gay, other sports are watching, right? NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball could be a good model here. It could be a disaster for other sports as we look ahead beyond the summer.
Well, it certainly serves as something of a model for people to go after as they do. But all the leagues are quite a bit different. You know, basketball is considering a self-contained kind of environment, the bio bubble, maybe Disneyland, maybe doing it in Las Vegas. Football is football. They do their own thing. They go to their own drummer, and they seem to be very confident that they're going to be back in the autumn. So baseball, as always, is a little bit asynchronous. It's different than any other sport. But if they get it back and they get going, as Doug has said repeatedly, it's a tremendous opportunity for a sport that could use one.
Jeff Passan reminded me there is no betting in baseball. But if you guys were betting folks, what would you say we're going to have in a 2020 season? Jason Gay, you first.
I would say yes. I thought it was very interesting that Bob said they will start, because that's a big part of this is when you can finish and if you can finish, given all the safety protocol.
Yeah. Doug Glanville, quick up or down, yes or no?
Yeah, I agree 100%. They'll start. I don't know about finish, but they'll start.
Doug Glanville, thank you so much. Former Major League Baseball player, co-host of the Starkville podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jason Gay, sports columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks to you, Jason.
Thanks kindly.
I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.